So, we're just going to skip that for now. In Ecclesiastes, the preacher spent a lot of time testing out all sorts of different activities, both good and evil, to see what was the wisdom and all of that, and he found it to be foolish. I'm not as wise as Solomon, so I tried every disease instead. And I have found that they too are all vanity, and I'm hoping that you can learn from that lesson. Don't get sick. Matthew chapter 5, verse 41 is the key theme that I want to really build from this. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. I love this verse, and so much of what we, and I think rightfully so, Matt even brought this up in his lesson this morning, we need to be very careful about taking statements out of context. But there are some statements in the Bible that are spoken to be taken and used all over the place all the time. The specific context of going an extra mile is talking about the Romans who could force the Jews to carry their things and force them to go along with them. And Jesus was saying, if they're going to force you to go a mile, you ought to go too. And he is teaching them, and that has a very specific cultural meaning for them right there. But in particular, especially what Jesus says, so much of the time, not every time, but so much of the time, what Jesus says has such tremendous value and understanding to it that the phrase, go the extra mile, has left the Bible and has joined our culture. And when people use that phrase, they're using it the right way, even if they don't understand the context of the Bible, about how we need to go the extra mile. If you're going to be a good person, you need to go the extra mile. And I think that that's really fascinating. What I want to talk about in this idea of going the extra mile is using that to portray the word picture portrays our absolute need to go above and beyond what is just the normal called out duty. I think this phrase of going the extra mile does a good job at portraying the idea of ought in Christianity. Well, we ought to, and then you fill in the blank, and there's all sorts of things that one ought to do. There's a lot of things that you know you need to do, or you feel like you ought to do, even if you cannot find that specifically in the text. There's just things that we ought to do. And as we grow in our wisdom, and as we grow in our understanding and experiences, we're going to see that better and better. Now, one thing that Matt brought up in his lesson this morning was some of the rules that we're going to come up with about, am I going to have a phone or not? Well, maybe for me, I ought not have a phone, but that's my rule, and you might have a different rule. And so there are some oughts and things that we're going to be working that way. And this going the extra mile is an important part of what our heart ought to be. The lesson is going to actually draw from, I was listening to a Bible class discussion, and it made me think about in the Bible class discussion, now I was sick at home, no surprise there, so I can't even remember what everybody else was saying. I was hearing Matt's responses on the YouTube, and so that's all fine, but I was hearing a discussion that made me think about what is the heart that a person needs to have when we're having a Bible class discussion, not a what's the answer to question number 4 on the worksheet, but rather, I've got questions about the Bible, or I've got questions about my life. And then Matt's lessons have been about that. It's about the importance of looking at the scriptures, and that the scriptures are going to have all of the right answers. Now, this is a room of people that I think always agrees with that the scriptures are going to have the answers, and we're going to go to the scriptures to find those answers. But we're also mature enough and experienced enough to know that just because we're going to the scriptures doesn't mean that we're always coming up with the same answers every time. And so there's then continued discussions and continued questions. I want to just consider, what does our heart need to be when we are talking about right and wrong, or when we are discussing Bible questions? And that's really what the whole thing is, discussions and questions and right and wrong. And our culture right now has this extreme ends of the spectrum. Whatever the topic is, you're either 100% one way or 100% the other way. And that's not healthy, and that's leading to people fighting and behaving in rude ways. That doesn't mean that we can be partially okay with sin, but rather how is our heart going to be when we are discussing these things? So I'm not really even going to talk about specific rights and wrongs, but rather, what are you when you are thinking about rights and wrongs? Matt's doing a really good job talking about how to determine those things. I just want to talk about our heart. I want to begin with a prayer that Paul has in Philippians. We're going to look at Philippians and Ephesians. I was just thinking about different passages in the New Testament that talked about and addressed what Christians need to be like and who they need to be. And I just found myself basically turning back one page back and forth between Ephesians and Philippians a whole bunch. So the whole lesson is essentially from Philippians and Ephesians. At the beginning of Philippians, we have a prayer from Paul. Paul is praying about a lot of things, and he's going to get to what he wants our heart to be. Philippians chapter 1, verse 3. I thank my God in all my remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine for you all, making my prayer with joy because of your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now. And I'm sure of this, that he who began a good work in you will bring it to completion in the day of Jesus Christ. For it is right for me to feel this way about you all, because I hold you in my heart, for you all are partakers with me of grace, both in my imprisonment and in my defense and confirmation of the gospel. For God is my witness how I yearn for you all with the affection of Christ Jesus. And it is my prayer that your love may abound more and more with knowledge and all discernment, so that you may approve what is excellent, and so be pure and blameless for the day of Christ, filled with the fruit of righteousness that comes through Jesus Christ, to the glory and praise of God. It's one of the typical openings to a letter where Paul has these massive run-on sentences and he just cram-packs them full of really interesting and powerful spiritual ideas. We don't have the time to look at all of them. But in 3, 4, and 5, he is thankful and prayerful about their partnership and the way that they're joining in with him and they're engaging with him. So there is a shared activity there in bringing the good news. And in verse 6, he's talking about the work that was started in them and that it's going to be brought to completion, that there's this mindset of further up and further in. We're going to do it, and we're going to do it all the way, and we're going to get there. And so there's that, you know, going the extra mile. Whatever it takes to get to that full completion, verse 6, is what he's going for. And they are partakers in the grace, whether it is good times or bad times. We can see that in verses 7 and 8, how they are engaged in those things with them. And then in 9 and 10 and 11, he brings up his prayer again. Now, I want you to think about, what are you going to do knowing that Paul is praying 9, 10, and 11 about you? And it is my prayer that your love may abound more and more with knowledge and all discernment, so that you may approve what's excellent, and so be pure and blameless for the day of Christ, filled with the fruit of righteousness that comes through Jesus Christ, to the glory and the praise of God. This is what his prayer is for us. He's not around praying for us the way he prayed for the Philippian church, but this is his prayer for Christians, that our love may abound more and more. There is no sedentary or stopping. There is this continuous growth. Talk about going an extra mile. I mean, that's what growth is, that we will continue to go in that direction, and that we're going to go and grow in this knowledge and discernment. Knowledge, we're getting the information about God. We're learning about his wisdom. We're learning about his laws. Maybe we're reading Bible stories where we see how somebody behaved well or how somebody behaved poorly, and we learn from that, and then we get discernment. Based on this information, how do I discern how to behave? What do I discern God's will is for me? We get this understanding so that we're going to know and how to approve excellent things. I like the superlatives here. We're going to approve what's excellent. We're not going to approve things that are meager or things that are just good enough. We're going after excellence. And that's what the goal is here, approving what's excellent, because I want to be pure and I want to be blameless. And I want to be that way, not to pat myself on the back, but because that's just the way I've got to be. I want to be pure. I don't want to have any impurities in me. I want to be blameless so that when God looks at me, he doesn't see a bunch of things on which he can lay blame. but rather he can say, here is a child of God. Here is someone that he will welcome in, so that we'll be filled with the fruit of righteousness. We will be producing these things. And so this is what Paul wants, right? That we will approve excellent things, that we will behave in purity, that we will behave blamelessly, that we will be filled with righteousness. This is kind of, well, duh. But sometimes, if we've been a Christian for a while, we need to be reminded that this is the activity that we are trying to engage ourselves in. And so this is what it's all about, that we will know right things. Now, Matt's lessons are a lot about how do we know what a right thing is. We're going to know the right things, and we're going to hold on to those right things. And whenever we're having a Bible discussion, and we happen to disagree about a right thing or a wrong thing, we're going to have it in the back of my mind. This discussion is only going to end with me clinging to the right thing, not necessarily me clinging to the thing that I began this argument with. I'm always searching for the right thing. I'm always searching for the best thing, whatever it is. Maybe my way is good and your way is better. That means my way was good. But I want to do more than just be good. I want to excel. I want to grow. I'm going to do what's right every single time. That's what Paul was praying about. He was in Philippi and he left. And what does he pray about them every day? That they're going to do better and they're going to grow in that. Now, that's just his prayer, that as they're, and again, I'm using the context of maybe we're having a Bible discussion, maybe we're in a Bible class and we're kind of trying to figure out something that's complicated. We're always thinking about what's the best, what's the absolute best thing that we can be. Now, he has a command for us back in Ephesians chapter 5, if you turn back a page or so. In Ephesians 5, verse 6, let no one deceive you with empty words. For because of these things, the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience. Let no one deceive you. Verse 7, therefore do not become partners with them. For at one time you were darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light, for the fruit of light is found in all that's good and right and true. And try to discern what is pleasing to the Lord. One of my favorite Bible verses. Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them. For it is shameful even to speak of the things that they do in secret. But when anything is exposed by the light, it becomes visible. For anything that becomes visible is light. Therefore, it says, awake, O sleeper, and arise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. In verses 6 through 10, he says that we need to not be deceived and to go along with them. We are actively different from those who are around us. Look at verse 6. Don't let them deceive you with their empty words. And so I'm entering into my Bible discussion with you, and we're both Christians, but I've been deceived by the world. I'm entering into this conversation with baggage. Maybe some sort of worldly philosophy, maybe it's some sort of worldly desire, and I'm letting that, God forbid, I'm letting that affect the way I'm having a discussion with you. And that's the danger. We need to not be deceived by their empty words. And we need to, verse 7, not be partners with that. The reason I'm having this discussion with you is because I'm trying to justify some sort of worldly behavior or some sort of passion that I'm interested in. But I'm not being honest with myself about it. I'm definitely not going to be honest with you about it. And so we can see how that Bible discussion is going to degrade. Instead, we are working to expose those problems. Look at verse 11. Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them. Not only are we going to be actively different from the world and fighting its influence in on me, but when I am evaluating my own thoughts about the Bible, or maybe when I'm having a conversation with you and you're evaluating my own thoughts that we're talking about, when you find any semblance of something dark, you are going to shine the light on my argument. And if I'm being a good Christian, as I am thinking about my own thoughts and I see something in the Bible that shines light on the darkness of my own thinking, I'm going to let that light shine through. That's the activity that we need to have here. We are always striving for absolutely best. You know, in the business world, it's best practices, right? We're always striving for the best that we can know. Now, the very nature of those things, look at verse 11, the unfruitful works of darkness. That thinking of the world that's trying to infect the way we might be having this conversation, it's unfruitful. It's not going to produce anything good. It might give me the opportunity to find a sneaky way to sin, but it's not going to produce any fruit in me. In fact, it's dark. And all the connotations of the idea there of dark is implied here. Dark as in evil, dark as in hiding, dark as in deceitful. And we know that because the exposing that the Christian is supposed to do on that darkness is hammered over and over again in verses 12 and 13 and 14. Shine the light on it. Bring it out. When you shine the light on something that it's dark, then it is no longer dark. And it's been exposed and it's brought to the light. And what happened to each of us? What happened to each of us when the light shined on us? Verse 14 says we woke up and came back from the dead. That's the effect here of this light. So regardless of my inclinations, regardless of where my passions are, my desire for light is always going to show up where the ugliness or the misperception, the misconception in my mind is going to be. Because I've been wrong, and I assume, not that I'm bragging about this, I assume I'm going to be wrong again someday, right? And so if my desire is always to let the light of God's word expose where something is wrong or needs to be changed or needs to be modified, we're always going to grow in the right way. Again, it's the same point here. I need to know only right things. And as I grow in my knowledge of what the right things are, every once in a while, the light's going to shine in on something that I know. Turns out it's wrong. Oh, I thought that this would be okay. I thought that this behavior would be all right. I didn't think that this worldly philosophy mattered very much in my life. And I realize that it can undermine a lot of good. And so whatever we're discussing in a Bible class, one-on-one, or what have you, we're always striving to shine the light on what we are saying, what somebody else is saying, and what our thinking is. And Paul gives us a reminder at the end of Ephesians on why this matters. He's praying that we'll grow. He's praying that we'll know the right things, right? And he's commanding us, only say the right stuff. Only think the right stuff. Expose the evil. He goes, and this is the reason why. Look at Ephesians 6, verse 10. Finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand firm. Stand, therefore, having fastened on the belt of truth, and having put on the breastplate of righteousness, and as shoes for your feet, having put on the readiness given by the gospel of peace. In all circumstances, take up the shield of faith with which you can extinguish all the flaming darts of the evil one, and take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God, praying at all times in the Spirit with all prayer and supplication. To that end, keep alert with all perseverance, making supplication for all the saints and also for me, that words may be given me in the opening of my mouth boldly to proclaim the mystery of the gospel, for which I am an ambassador in chains, that I may declare it boldly as I ought to speak. Here's the big reminder. The reason I have to work so hard on making my heart right, even if I'm just having a Bible discussion with you, and we're at loggerheads, or this is confusing, or I don't know how we're going to come up to an understanding here. The thing that I need to remember is, I'm not fighting against you. Even though, in the middle of the discussion, you have clamped down on your theory and your idea as hard as you can, and of course I've clamped down on my theory and my idea as hard as I can, and the best answer we know to figure that out is to smash our heads together like we're, you know, goats up on the mountains smashing our heads together. That's not what our fight is. Verse 12, we do not wrestle against each other. right? We do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against, and here the Bible gets a little mystical, right? What do these words mean? Against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. I don't know what all of those things are. And that's really what the point is. There is a spiritual fight that we don't see and cannot know clearly. But when you and I are having this kind of a discussion, those spiritual forces are trying to invade and trying to push and trying to tweak it so that I'm going to act in a bad way and you're going to act in a bad way. Or I'm going to act with selfish motives and you're going to react with selfish motives. And that's what Satan is trying to do. He's trying to get us to think that the nature of this fight is worldly, and we need to duke it out, and I need to insult your idea, and you need to insult my idea. And now we've descended into the world of darkness rather than continued to maintain this conversation in a spiritual way. I think what Paul is reminding us here in Ephesians chapter 6 is that it's less about the person or the object when we're having these discussions and questions. It's more about the evil influence that has invaded. Now, the question could come from innocence and a not understanding the Bible, because it might be unclear. But a lot of Bible discussions come from false teaching of the world that we've heard and we didn't know that we were agreeing with. Or maybe a desire to do something evil, and we're trying to inject that into the Bible. So already, that's Satan trying to change us and affect us. That's not a battle of flesh and blood. That's a spiritual battle that has invaded us. I'm not saying that our Bible classes are full of evil, but Satan wants to invade our Bible classes. And I don't mean to sound overblown there, but he would love to take good Bible classes and ruin them by us getting into arguments, or I don't like the class anymore because they keep debating that topic and I'm just going to shut up and be quiet over here. And there's a lot of ways that, spiritually speaking, we can be divided and destroyed. And so we need to remember that this is a cosmic battle that we are engaged in. And so we need to expose, not brother so-and-so is dumb, that's not the way to do it. But if brother so-and-so says something that has some darkness in it, either during or probably maybe even after the Bible class, going and talking about that and shining the light on that, not making it about brother so-and-so or sister so-and-so. I think that that's a key idea. And then when we engage in these discussions, we need to be careful that we don't behave in a worldly way, right? We could analyze and maintain these discussions in very worldly terms. We can say things like, well, technically, if I do this sin this way, it's not a sin. That's a very stupid sentence. But I know what that argument sounds like when I'm trying to sin myself, and I've heard other people talk that way. Technically, if I do it this way, it's okay. Well, when you consider this, it doesn't apply to us, because actually, and then you fill in the blank, it may be that way for you, but for me, and you can just tweak the Bible into meaning whatever you want it to be. This is the way that a lot of people try to approach the Bible, like they're some sort of analyst or an engineer, or they're claiming to be a theologian. And the meaning of those three words is, to me, I can make the Bible say what I tell the Bible to say rather than letting it speak for itself. That's approaching the Bible on very worldly terms. Nowadays, we can make any word mean anything we want it to. That's just the way the rules are nowadays. I think they're stupid rules, and we don't have to live that way. That's the way people do live. When we look at the Bible, we really just need to let the Bible mean what it means and try to say, well, what is it saying to me? And be ready for the fact that it might shine some darkness on me. Be ready for the fact that I might realize that I've been wrong. We need to be disciples, which are following learners. Not theologians. Theologians want their own disciples. We need to be following learners day in and day out. And so Christians are always trying to find out what's the right thing to do, what's the best thing to do. Whereas, and I thought Matt's example was perfect, so I went ahead and put it in my notes here. In Matthew chapter 15, When Jesus is talking to the Pharisees and they're saying, oh, you're not washing your hands. That's against the traditions. And Jesus says, yeah, but you're abandoning your family so that you can give money to God. You're abandoning the law of God, tweaked to obey this law. And I thought Matt did a really good job of saying, okay, I could do this, and if I do it this way, then I do the next step this way, and if I do the next step this way, then I can get all the way to the point where it's okay for me to do this sin, abandoning my parents, and here is the logical steps that I took to get there. And that is the way that we justify our foolish desires. A Christian is always trying to do the right thing and the best thing. We are always trying to shine the light of Jesus on every discussion, remembering that this is a spiritual battle. That's where the battleground is. And if I start speaking with worldly arguments and that sort of tweaking of ideas, then I'm leaving the spiritual battle and just descending down to be one of the people of the earth. Plus, verses 14 through 18, where it's talking about the armor of God, truth and righteousness, the readiness of the gospel, faith, salvation, and the strength of the word. If you fill yourself up with that in Ephesians 6, when you're busy with the idea of what is the truth and what is the righteousness, you don't really have a lot of room for moral ambiguity. When you are constantly trying to figure out what's righteous, you're not going to find lots of loopholes. You'll realize that the loopholes that you wondered if they're there, they're not there at all. Keep praying for boldness to read and know God's word the way Paul was asking for our prayers, that he would boldly speak. And remember that we're in this together. Again, a Bible discussion in a Bible class ought to be a coming together, not a fighting against each other. In Ephesians chapter 1, I, therefore, a prisoner of the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling with which you've been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. There is one. And you guys know all the ones. There's one. Now, I'm not saying that we're having problems in our Bible classes, in our discussions, but rather, as you are thinking about Bible ideas and topics on your own, when you're studying on your own, and when you are thinking about this, is this right or is this wrong, and you're going back and forth in your mind, remember that you have sisters and brothers that you can ask, and we are all on the same side together. We're not against each other. We're in this together. And we are eager to maintain the very bond of peace the Spirit has brought us to be together. And we know that there is a oneness of all of this. There is one body and spirit, one calling. We are united in this one. And that's a great thing. That's a great thing. Some of us know it better than the rest of us. That's a good thing. I mean, feel embarrassed that you don't know as much, and let that maybe encourage you to keep reading and get to know more. But ask the people who you know the Bible well. Ask them questions. Reach out to them. Let them teach you. Let yourself be taught so that you can grow up into this. Because as it continues through, really the reading I wanted here was all the way through verse 16, and it's a long passage. Starting in verse 7, it talks about what Jesus had done, the gifts that God has sent to us through his son. He went down and he came back up and he gave these apostles. But look at the activities that jump out of this starting in verse 12. All that work from God through Jesus is to equip the saints for the work of ministry, for the building up of the body of Christ, until we all attain to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to mature manhood, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, so that we may no longer be children tossed to and fro by the waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by human cunning, by craftiness and deceitful schemes. Rather, speaking truth in love, we are to grow up in every way into him. And it continues on, this whole united body. There is this unity of the faith We're in this together to be united in all of these things. Verse 13, until we come to a mature manhood that we measure up and are as tall as Christ. That's the image that I have here. We're measuring to the stature of Christ, which is a pretty tall order. But we've been given the information so that we can work together in this in verse 13 so that we measure up to that rather than being, what's the problem in verse 14? Tossed around by waves and by winds of teachings and cunning and craftiness and deceit. See, that's again, that's the way the world works. God forbid any of us teach in a way that is cunning, crafty, and deceitful. Now, there are religious teachers who teach that way or who treat people that way. I try not to. I try to, let's all look at the Bible together. And I don't know how I can be tricky past that, because we're just reading it together. That's what we're all engaged in. We're not trying to trick. We're not trying to catch people. We're trying to all of us grow in this in a united way, in this togetherness. So God provides a way for all of us to be united and to continue to grow in our understanding. We will have questions about right and wrong. We will, because new things are going to be invented. And who knew that the internet was going to be a problem when it was invented? You know, who knew that such and such was going to be a problem when, what about the different pain medications? Who knew that those things were going to become problems of epidemic proportions, right? And so we find out something that was invented or some tool, some man-made thing, which in and of itself is neither good nor bad. And all of a sudden, it's changed the way that humanity operates and changed the world we live in. And we have to go, where is this object in the Bible? Or how do I address this idea with the Bible? And we're going to have to talk about these things together. But we're always going to strive to do it in a way that is towards unity and towards what's right and what's absolutely best. I don't know, in the topic of methamphetamines, why we wouldn't want to go with the absolute right way. There's a whole lot of other options with meth. Oh, take a little bit. Take a medium amount. Oh, just take a whole lot every other week. There's a lot of options out there on taking meth. But the right answer is always never take any. And that's the way that we need to approach these sorts of topics. Always doing what's best. Mindful that the world is trying to come in and say, oh, a little bit. You can do it every other week. You can do it once a year. You can mix and match with all these different ideas. That's the way the world is trying to get us to think. Now I want to look at Paul's final command. I'm saying final command only in the sense that it's my last slide. This is by no means his final command. It's in the middle of a letter. So that's okay, though. It does begin wrapping up a big idea he had in Philippians. Philippians chapter 2, starting in verse 12. Therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, so now, not only as in my presence, but much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you both to will and to work for his good pleasure. Do all things without grumbling or disputing, that you may be blameless and innocent children of God without blemish in the midst of a crooked and twisted generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast to the word of life, so that in the day of Christ I may be proud that I did not run in vain or labor in vain, even if I am to be poured out as a drink offering upon the sacrificial offering of your faith. I am glad and rejoice with you all. Likewise, you also should be glad and rejoice with me. We need to work out our salvation with fear and trembling. Fear and trembling is not cockiness. You don't walk around with fear and trembling knowing that you know more than everyone else in the room. When we're entering these discussions, when I have my own Bible question, when I know a brother is struggling with something and I'm coming into that discussion or into that reading for my own self, I need to enter it with fear and trembling. And I think we need to remember that the word fear means fear. It can mean respect, but the word fear means fear. I need to fear God. For some reason, it sounds worse to say be afraid of God. I need to fear God when I approach his word and approach these questions. And so what am I going to do? I'm going to work it out with fear and trembling because God is working with me in this in verse 13. Look at verse 14. I need to have a discussion with you without any grumbling or disputing. I need to, verse 15, aim to be blameless and innocent, not connected to this twisted and crooked world. Verse 16, holding fast to what words? The words of life. Because worldly philosophies die out. Paul, as an example of that behavior, was willing to pour himself out on our behalf. And that's the length that we need to take this. What do we need to do? Well, we need to go the extra mile. When we're looking at these questions, when we're thinking about these different topics or ideas, what should my heart be when I am reading God's word? My heart ought to be going an extra mile. I need to do the best every single time. It's my prayer that your love may abound more and more with knowledge and discernment so that you may approve what is excellent and so be pure and blameless into the day of Christ, filled with the fruit of righteousness that comes through Jesus Christ to the glory and praise of God. Whenever we see something dark, we shine God's light on it. Unabashedly. We know it might hurt somebody's feelings, but you don't have to worry about hurting the feelings of darkness. You just need to expose that. We need to remember that what the fight is. The fight isn't interpersonal. The fight is always against Satan's forces. And Satan might be influencing my friend. Satan might be influencing me. But it's always a fight against Satan. And we need to remember that we are living and doing all of this in unity and towards unity. So that if you and I are having a heated discussion, I need to remember this is so that we can be united, not so that we will be divided. I want to close by looking at Psalm 16, the lesson will be yours. It's just a short psalm, but it's a good prayer from David on how to be. Psalm 16. Preserve me, O God, for in you I take refuge. I say to the Lord, You are my Lord. I have no good apart from you. As for the saints in the land, they are the excellent ones in whom is all my delight. The sorrows of those who run after another god shall multiply. Their drink offerings of blood I will not pour out or take their names upon my lips. The Lord is my chosen portion and my cup. You hold my lot. The lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. Indeed, I have a beautiful inheritance. I bless the Lord who gives me counsel. In the night also my heart instructs me. I have set the Lord always before me. Because he is at my right hand, I shall not be shaken. Therefore, my heart is glad, and my whole being rejoices. My flesh also dwells secure. For you will not abandon my soul to Sheol, or let your Holy One see corruption. You make known to me the paths of life. In your presence there is fullness of joy. At your right hand are pleasures forevermore. God makes known to us the paths of life. And in his presence, if we take that path towards life, we will have a fullness of joy. And in his hand is the pleasure that we are seeking. If the Lord is always before us, if we are only surrounding ourselves by the holy ones, the excellent ones in whom is our delight, then we are going to be surrounding ourselves with Christians, walking only on the path that he is revealing, because that's what our heart is desiring. We're going to have questions. We're going to have mistakes. We're going to have some Bible passages that we don't always understand. But if the Lord is always in front of us, he's going to make known the right paths. And I want to encourage you to have that in your mind as Matt's continuing to teach about how to find out what's the truth in the scriptures, how to have a Bible discussion with your neighbor or with your family members or in our own classes here. Keep this in your heart so that you will always be seeking what is right and shining light on that which is dark. If there's anyone who needs help, if you want prayers, if you've been discouraged in your life, there's a lot of sisters and brothers who want to pray with you and for you. Why don't you come forward as we stand together and sing?